श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय। श्रीमन महाप्रभु की
जय।
श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की
जय।
श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय। श्री श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय। श्री श्री राध गोविंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय। गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद हरि। So good morning to all. Pranam. Thanks so much for your presence and your time and attention, investing your lives in these topics. That's a huge investment. That's the most important question. What do I do with my lifetime, energy, and the direction in which you are investing that? That's showing where you are heading toward. So that's a very interesting trailer of the prospect that is waiting for us. So as Krishna Chandra Prabhu just mentioned in the introduction, we are invited to continue increasing our astonishment, our sense of aho, since we have one more day to be here together in this body, in this world, in this association, which is not of this world, and which goes way beyond our bodies. And we're invited to go to Braj one more time. So let's make another attempt, one more attempt. Till one day it works so perfectly well that there's no turning back from there, yeah. So today we will be seeing verse 34 of the Brahma Stuti. Very important also verse, among many other important verses, in which Brahma will somehow make one final prayer, if you will, one final request, very personal. As we will see, he will pray to be bathed in the dust of Braj. But before that, let's go as usual to yesterday's verse for a brief summary, recap, which was verse 33. Another interesting verse. Another interesting verse in which Brahma will praise his own good fortune and that of the devas. So he says, I'll read the English quickly. O Achyuta, there is no need to say more about the extent of the inconceivable good fortune of the residents of Braj. Ah, we 11 presiding deities of the various senses and headed by Shiva are also most fortunate, because the senses of the Brajavasis are the cups through which we repeatedly drink the nectar and intoxicating liquor of the honey of your lotus feet. There are not enough words. So, before Brahma prays the good fortune of the Brajavasis, Aho Bhagyam and other verses, now he's turning to praise his own good fortune. So, after glorifying the good fortune of the Brajavasis in general, and the Sakas, the Gopas in particular, because that's his longing, here he's pointing to his own good fortune, but he's making the point, my good fortune only exists in relation to the Brajavasis' good fortune. And even he's calling Krishna Achyuta here, infallible, here, sorry, Achyuta, infallible, and also, like, the idea will be, okay, your devotees are also infallible because you are infallible. So one idea is, since you are infallible, they are infallible. But another idea is, since the Brajavasis' affection for you is infallible, therefore you are known as the infallible one. Their love makes you infallible. So, but here Brahma is presenting also his own good fortune along with the devas. for having the chance of somehow entering in touch with the lotus liquor for Krishna, from Krishna's feet. Which again, this is a kind of alankar or poetic device, because from the feet generally liquor is not coming, or honey or nectar, but these are lotus feet, and this is a wine made of lotus flower, if you will. Amrita Savan was the word that Brahma used, which referred to something which is sweet, which is also intoxicating, and which is giver of life. Asa means life air, pran, and Asavan is the plural of that, a multitude of pran, multitude of life airs. So this nectar is sweet and life-giving. And also the word amrita means this is drunk even by those who are amrita, who are muktas, who are beyond death. So the nectar of your feet is to be drunk on a post-liberated situation. Not even before liberation, but actually after that. And we mentioned here, Brahma mentions 11 deities of the senses. And we make different calculations that supposedly there are 14, why he says 11. You have to
minus two,
plus one, plus three, minus two, and well, different ways that you can keep the 11 in group. And of course, but we say it, and Krishna Chandraprabhu asked, but the devas of this world are material personalities. So, how can they preside over the senses of the Brajavasis, the Ragatmikas? So that's not possible. So our acharyas gave different possibilities to why Brahma is speaking like that. On one level, the point is, as there are devas in this world, there are devas in Golok. And those are the devas presiding over the Brajavasis' transcendental senses, because they are transcendental as well. Or another possibility is the devas from this world, somehow they had the chance to have a glimpse at some distance of Krishna's lila when he performed his lila on earth. So in that way, somehow they are drinking that nectar on some level. Or also we said that Brahma, the Brahma who is speaking here, who is not a Nitya Siddha Ragatmika, somehow, in the joy and happiness, he identified himself with the Nitya Siddha Brahma, if you will, from Golok. I think, well, we have the same name, actually. And we have a similar function. So somehow he bridges the gap and presents himself as in connection to him, to that Brahma. So, some words about last verse yesterday. So in today's verse, Brahma's humility keeps increasing, and with lots of humility, he will speak about his Bhuri Bhagyam, which is like his most greatest fortune possible, and he will speak that will be to obtain any birth in Braj. But as we already explained before, and we will continue explaining, ultimately that any birth will be in such a way that it allows him to at some point enter in the situation of being a friend of Krishna. But as we spoke this day, sometimes a devotee will be possessed by deep humility and think, oh, this ideal is so big, and I'm so low, probably I will make it very soon. So as an in-between attainment, at least let me be born nearby those that I aspire to serve for eternity, in any form whatsoever. So in that type of spirit, Brahma will pray today. No? He won't say my highest goal is to be a gopa, although he wants that. But he said, that's too much, so let me be born in Braj in any form and somehow get the mercy of those gopas so someday I can become one of them. So, let's go to today's verse, which is verse 34. And this is also in Basanta Tilak, the same meter than yesterday's verse. Let's always keep the Bhagavad above our heads, please, as Krishna Chandra was showing us.
Like Shamarani always said that when she put the book like this, I said, you are not the book, you are the Swaroop.
So this is not the whiteboard.
No.
It seems so. It seems a book, seems whiteboard, but it's something else. So I'll read the verse once, and then we can repeat all together. Tat bhuri bhagyamiha janma kimapyatavyam yad gokule pikata mangri rajo vishekam yad jivitam tunikhilam bhagavam mukundas twadyapi yad padaraja shruti mrigyameva. I'll repeat all together.
Tad bhuri bhagyamiha janma kimapyatavyam yad gokule pikata mangri rajo vishekam jajivitam tu nikhilam bhagavan mukundas twadyapi yad padaraja shruti mrigyameva.
So I'll read the translation first, and then we will go to the word by word. So Brahma is praying here. My greatest possible good fortune will be to take any type of birth in this forest so that I can receive the abhishek, or the bathing, of the foot dust of someone in Gokul. For whom Bhagavan Mukunda is their entire life and soul. The dust of his lotus feet is still being soaked by the personified Vedas even to this day. Even to this day. So this is today's verse. Today's prayer by Sri Brahmaji. Basically, we could say one of the last prayers in the whole stuti. There are a few more, of course, but this is one of the zenith ones, if you will. So let's go to the word by word meaning of the verse, and then we will share some commentaries. So I'll repeat the word, and then you repeat after me. Tat. That. Bhuri bhagyam,
bhuri bhagyam,
the greatest good fortune,
the greatest good fortune,
iha,
here,
janma kimapi, any type of birth,
artavyam,
in the forest, of Vrindavan, of course.
Yad.
Which? Gokule. Even in Gokul. Which here refers to the broader Brajamandal. Api. Even.
Katama.
Of one of many. Yeah, of many of the devotees he's referring, not the Brajavasis. Angri.
Of the feet.
Rajaha.
By the dust.
Abhishekam.
Bathing.
Yat.
Whose?
Jivitam.
Life.
To indeed Nikhilam.
Nikhilam.
Entire.
Entire.
Bhagavan Mukunda.
Bhagavan Mukunda.
Bhagavan Mukunda.
To.
Only.
Only.
Adya api.
Adya api.
Even until now.
Now.
Yat pada rajaha. The dust of the feet of whom?
The dust of the feet of whom?
Shruti.
Shruti.
By the Vedas.
By the Vedas.
Mrigyam.
Mrigyam.
Salt.
Salt.
Like searched, right?
Eva.
Still.
Still.
So that's today's verse. Brahma is praying that his greatest good fortune, I mentioned it one more time, to take any birth whatsoever in the forest. In Braj, so he can receive, he can be bathed by the dust of the inhabitants of anyone in Vrindavan. And why? Because for them, Bhagavan Mukunda is their life and soul. And the dust of Bhagavan Mukunda's feet, even the Vedas personified are running after that foot dust. Even to these days, Brahma said. Like implying they have not been able to catch that yet. So I'll begin with my Guru Maharaj's commentary on this verse first. His Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubhag, who will be included in his forthcoming book. So he says like this. Brahma again prays to take birth in the cowherd community where Mukunda is everyone's all in all. And he also prays to be bathed, Abhishek, from head to toe in its cow dust. The dust coming from the cows of Braj. However, here, out of humility, Brahma implies that in the case he is not qualified to attain his ideal of Sakyarasa, may at least attain some type of residence in Braj. In this way, he extols the virtues of Braj and any and all of its residents. Okay, so this is the commentary of my Guru Maharaj to this verse. Well, he begins saying that Brahma, again, he's praying for birth in the cowherd community. So maybe you recall, now today we are in verse 34, but in verse 30, in a more general way, not so specific, not mentioning Braj. So Brahma is praying, using a similar expression, Bhuri Bhago, in that verse. My greatest good fortune. And he basically saying that in one life or another, O Nata or Bhagavan, even among animal species, I may be counted as one of your people. And may I continuously serve your feet. This is like an upgraded version of that verse, if you will, with more details. To be born as a devotee, where? No? So in this verse, Brahma is kind of repeating verse 30, but in a more specific way. In a more specific way than that verse, but still in a generic way, not specifying his own affinity in Braj, out of humility. To follow my point. Now he said, verse 30, may I be born as any form as your devotee. Here he said, may I be born as any form in Braj. But still the most specific thing is, I want to be your friend, your Gopa. But out of great humility, he can pray for that now. So somehow let me be born in Vrindavan and receive the grace of those gopas, their feet and the foot dust, and attain that eventually. So again, due to extreme humility, Brahma here is praying from a birth in any species, again, like the other verse, 30, but in Braj. So in these connections, it is said that the word Iha here, there are different meanings, acharyas will give different meanings, but can be, Iha can mean Nriloke or human birth. Atabhyam, which means in the forest, can mean be born as a tree. Forests are full of trees. And Gokule, apart from referring to Gokul, Go means cow. So as a cow in the kul, in the village, something. So any birth, human, tree, cow, and all the possibilities in between. But in Braj. Because he wants to receive Abhishekam, Raj Abhishekam. So we can make a play of words with Raj Abhishekam as well. Because Abhishekam means like bathing, bath. And Raj can mean different things. Raj can mean king, like Maharaj. So Raj also can be royal. So if you receive Raj Abhishekam, means you are receiving a royal bathing. Which is generally something that a king or great personality will receive. And Brahma is a pretty big personality. Indeed, to say that he's accustomed to receive Raja Abhishekam in Brahma Lok. He's Brahma, in his planet, Brahma Lok. Raja Abhishekam. But here he's praying from another type of Raja Abhishekam. The real one, he discovered, which is the real Raja Abhishekam. Because Raja also can mean dust. So I want to be bathed by the dust of Braj. By the Raj of Braj. That's why we call it Braj. Because it's full of Raj. So this is a real glory of the real imperial royal bathing that Brahma wants. The ultimate Abhishek he wants to take. Raja Abhishekam. Sometimes Braj is characterized as like a play of words also. Some other word for dust is Renu. We will see one verse in this connection. So Braj is known, as Krishna is known by peacock feather, flute. You put a peacock feather on a flute and I tell you, who is that pointing to? You immediately know who is the person behind that. So similarly, Braj is defined, characterized by three things. Renu, Dhenu, and Benu. So Renu means dust. Dhenu means cows. And Benu means Benu, flute. So these are three defining features of the Braj. So here Brahma is focused on Renu. The dust, which also is known as Raj. So since we mentioned this idea of dust as Renu, we can also make some connection from this verse with another famous verse in the Bhagavatam, which is very similar to this verse, in which the word Renu is appearing. And this is a prayer from Uddhava, in his Uddhava Gita. There are two Uddhava Gitas in the Bhagavatam. One is the whole instruction of Krishna to Uddhava in the 11th canto. But another Uddhava Gita are six verses that Uddhava sings before leaving Braj. As we know, Uddhava was sent to Braj as a messenger by Krishna. Krishna was, quote-unquote, outside of Braj. So Uddhava tried to console the Brajavasis. But we know how that turned out. We already spoke about that these days. He thought, I come here to give a message to them. But he realized, Krishna sent me here to learn some message from them. No? They have something to teach me. So it is described that Uddhava stayed in Vrindavan like almost for a year. He was taken to Parikram by the Vrajavasis and were absorbed, recalling all the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. So just before leaving Braj and returning to Krishna, Uddhava bids farewell from the Vrajavasis, reciting six famous verses, called also as Uddhav Gita. Very important verses, starting from Etam Param Tanubrito Bhavigo Bhavadu and ending with Vandinanda Brajasrinam and so on. So the fourth of these verses, which maybe is the most famous of them, includes this word Renu, dust, and it's very similar to this verse. And in this case, it's Uddhav, the one praying for a very, quote-unquote, insignificant birth anywhere in Braj. So he says, Asamaho charanarenajasammahamsyam vrindavane kimapi gulmalato shadhinam jadusjajasajanamaryapatham chahitva bhejur mukunda padavim shruti bhir vrimigyam. So there are many similar points between these two verses. I mean, there are many similar points between the experience of Uddhava and the experience of Brahma, as outsiders of Braj, but somehow having a glimpse of Braj, and that affecting their own constitution. Like, wow, what's... I didn't know what's this. I'm rediscovering Krishna here. I knew Krishna from before, but now I'm realizing this Brajavasis know Krishna way much more. And I'm attracted to this. So, of course, in the verse of Uddhav, a few words about that, and then we return here. In the verse of Uddhav, he's mostly praising the Braja Gopikas, the Madhurya Rasa Gopikas. But there are many common points. Of course, he's praising the Gopis. No? These Gopis have rejected everything. Position, reputation, dharma, just to run after the flute of Krishna. How fortunate they are. They have attained him, while the Shrutis are running after him, but not attaining him. He will pray in Davane Lata Sadin. My greatest fortune will be to be born in this Braj, maybe as a vine, some shrub there, so I can be bathed by the Renu, Samaho Charana Renu, by the dust of the feet of these gopis. Interestingly, in this verse also Uddhav addresses Krishna as Mukunda. I hear also Mukunda. And in both verses we have a similar expression. Uddhav says Shruti Virpi Mrigyam, and here Brahma says Shruti Mrigyam, which is the same notion. Is the Shruti or the Veda is seeking after you, looking at, trying to catch you, but cannot. And in this verse, Brahma is saying, for the Brajavasis, you are the all in all. You are their everything. And Uddhav will say, the gopis left everything for you, which is basically the same idea. You are their everything. That means they left everything else for you. No? Even the Vedas, no? Especially the gopis. No? They've left Vedas behind. They left all the dharma and all this dharma, how one should behave in society. Traigunya Vishaya Vedanis Traigunya Babarjana. Ultimately, that line of the Gita applies to the Parakya Gopis. No? The Vedas are speaking about the Trigunas and so on. Reject the Vedas. So the Gopis say, yes, we don't care for anything else. We care only for Krishna. So the point here also is the Vedas can merely seek Krishna, but the Brajavasis fully possess Krishna. So the Vedas will tell you, Krishna is God. But the Vedas are after, looking after Krishna, running after Krishna. And Yashoda will say, Krishna is not God, he's my child. But she has Krishna fully trapped on her lap. So whom should we take more seriously? Vedas say Krishna is God, but we have not catched him yet. So I say, Krishna is not God, and he's here with me, he's my son. So that's the Bhagavad's version. The Bhagavad is above what the Vedas may tell. Anyhow, some words in connection to this famous verse of the Bhagavatam pronounced by Uddha, which are very, it's like a parallel version of this one. So let's begin with the most ancient commentaries by Sridhar Swami, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and so on. So let's begin with Sridhar Swami's Bhartha Deepika. So you put your first seat belt now. You will need at least 4 or 5 today. So Sridhar Swami will begin pointing at Bhuri Bhagyam, which is expression. What does Brahma mean with this? Bhuri Bhagyam, which means, may I have the greatest possible good fortune, profuse good fortune. Bhagyam means fortune, and Bhuri means a lot, as much as I can. So Sridhar Swami, again, he's pointing to what Brahma mentioned in verse 30. That again, he uses a similar expression. But here he is qualifying more. What is the type of good fortune he was? Kimapi janma, which means any birth whatsoever. But Sridhar Swami gives another idea. Any type of birth, he says, iha means in this world of man, the human species on the planet Earth, but inside the planet Earth, I will prefer birth in the forest. And on top of that, if we analyze different forests, Gokul. So according to Sridhar Swami, here Brahma is going from general to more specific. No? Human birth on Earth, some forest, Gokul. So at this point, someone may ask Brahma. And maybe that someone may be Krishna himself. So Krishna may ask Brahma or someone else. Here Tribhanga had like 3 glasses, so if you need some extra, you can give one, I don't think. With some luck, I will take only one, so we can just... So Krishna may ask Brahma. Brahma is saying, let me be born here in this forest in whatever form. But what is the gain in abandoning Satya Lok? You have such a fancy planet, Brahma. So you are willing to abandon such a high planet and birth and take birth in whatever species on this forest? Externally, it seems like it makes no sense whatsoever. So Brahma says, no, so Krishna said, you are willing to take any birth here? So to this, Sridhar Swami said, Brahma replies, not just any birth, but a birth in which I will receive the Abhishek, I will be bathed by the foot dust of someone, anyone, among those who reside in Gokul. So Brahma will say, That's not just any birth. No, that's the point. If you receive the dust from the feet of anyone in Gokul, that's not any birth. That's something very special, very specific. So at this point, someone may ask Brahma, and that someone may be Krishna. Why do you say only the residents of Gokul are fortunate? There's so many other residents, so many other devotees, bhaktas, so many places. And Brahma will respond saying, Bhagavan Mukunda is their life. The jivitam tu nikilam Bhagavan Mukunda. In other words, their whole lives are dedicated exclusively to him. And that's his reply. That's why these inhabitants are especially fortunate. And Sridhar Swami then concludes saying, in the last line of the verse, Brahma talks about how Mukunda is hard to get.
Shruti
Mrigyam. That, which means his foot dust, his Padaraja, is soaked after by the Vedas. It's only soaked, he said, not even seen. Like if you are looking for something but you have not seen it. You know it exists. So that speaks how difficult to get it. That's how unique to Durlava. We quoted Mahaprabhu. He says, Shrotam api Upanishadam dure harikatam vrita. So the Upanishad, the Vedas can take you to a certain distance. But Harikatha, Bhagavat, can take you way more beyond that. And that's where the Veda and the Upanishad wants to enter. And that's the Braj. Indeed, in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a section with of the prayers of the personified Vedas. And that's a very nice section. So you, if you study that, you see how the Vedas still have something to attain. And ultimately, they are longing to enter Braj Lila. In Shastra, this is described how the personified Vedas want to are performing tapasya or trying to make whatever they can to enter there. But we know tapasya is not the way. Similar to Lakshmi's attempt to enter Rasa Lila. So there is an interesting quote in the Vedas itself about attaining the dust of Braj. It's a verse from the Rig Veda. The Rig Veda is the oldest Veda. So I'll share with you. So the section says, we long to go to those places. We long to go to those places of you, the prayers to Bhagavan. We long to go to those places of you where the cows have great horns and are agile. Agile, you say? That supreme abode, who is profusely praised, shines abundantly. So if you play out the implications of this, that's pointing to the Braj. And the Vedas themselves are saying, we long to enter in that land of big horns.
So Gokul. In this prayer, in the Rig Vedas, it's also the Vedas who are saying.
Again, sorry?
Also in this verse from the Rig Vedas,
yes.
It's the Vedas themselves who are saying.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a confirmation of how they are trying to, but they have not got it. Yes, sir.
There are four, I guess, because there are four Vedas, there are four persons, like personifications for each Veda, and they exist in the...
Yeah, sometimes it's spoken as personified. I mean, in our tradition, everything is personified. So you have the four personified Vedas, but you have the 108 personified Upanishads. So everything is personified, no? Our Bhagavad Purana is personified because it's not different from Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So it's a person. As we were saying before, Bhagavatam is not a book. The verse is not a whiteboard. It's a person. So when this verse is referring whether to the Vedas or the word Shruti, generally applies to the Vedas, but sometimes the same word applies to the Upanishads, which is part of the Vedas, but the most confidential part of the Vedas, which helps to make the point even strongly. But yeah, basically, whatever the case, there are personified forms of those, and they are longing to enter the Braj. So that's Siddhar Swami's Bhavartha Deepika commentary. Let's go to Srila Sanatana Goswami, to his Brihad Vaishnava Toshani. He has a good amount of things to say, very interesting. The second seat belt for you. Here Brahma prays with a desire for bhakti, like that of the people of Braj, or also we could say for a desire to serve their feet, which is another way of putting the same thing. No? One thing takes to another. I want bhakti like them, but how to get that? Serving those who already have that bhakti. Raganuga bhakti. Now Sanatana Goswami says something very interesting. Say, with the five words beginning from Iha, Brahma rejects five obstacles to this type of bhakti, to Braja bhakti. So we will see how this plays out. He will begin with this next word, Janma, and then he will go to Iha, and Kim, Api, Atabhyam. So Janma, he says, let's go here, then we go here, and so on. So Janma means what?
Birth.
Birth. So with the word Janma, Brahma is rejecting liberation. Because he said, may I be born there. He's not saying, may I never be born again. So with the same Janma, he's rejecting Mukti, which is an obstacle to Braja Bhakti. All the forms of Mukti, even the devotional ones, in Vaikuntha. Says the Bhagavatam in this series of Aham Bhakta Parad, the third verse. He said, we reject all the forms of Mukti, even Salokya, Samipya, Sarsi, because the devotees are so full in Seva, Sevaya Purna. They don't want anything else. They don't care even for being born again here. So, Mamajan Manijan Manishwara, this is the point. Word Janma rejects liberating from Janma.
It's very interesting because in the Vedas everywhere said you have to become a mukshu in Yoga Sutra also.
Oh.
You have to give everything for freedom.
Yeah.
But now, it turns the point.
Yeah.
And please, I want Janma.
Yeah, in Gyan, if you tread the path of Sankaracharya, one of the angas of Gyan, of the main limbs of the practice, is mumukshatva, which means to have a deep longing for mukti. If you don't have deep longing for mukti, you don't have the adhikar to tread the path of Gyan. So that's adhikar in Gyan. But in bhakti, that lacks of adhikar in bhakti. If you want mukti intensely, that disqualifies you for Braja Bhakti. So anyhow, that's the first word, Janma. Second word is Iha. So Iha means here. No? In this particular form, being born as a human in Braj. That rejects Swarga, Sanatana Goswami says. So I don't care for liberation. Someone says, well, but maybe you care for Swarga. Of course, Brahma he's in the topmost Swarga himself. So Angus says, so Brahma, you care for remaining in Brahma Lok? Iha, here, not there, here. Similar to Kaibalyam, Narakaya, Tetriya, this rejecting Tridashapur, all this type of thing. So Swarga is not in the equation. So Janma rejects Mukti, which is the goal of Gyan. And Iha rejects Swarga, which is the goal of karma, heavenly delights. Then with the word Kimapi, which means any birth, Brahma rejects being born as a Brahmana. Kim Brahma Janmavira Nantakatara says. Because someone says, okay, you don't care to be liberated. Okay, you don't care to go to Swarga. You want to be born here. You would like to be born here as a Brahmana? They are the gods on earth. That's the highest possible word you can have. Because again, Brahma is pointing to Vrindavan. If you are born in Vrindavan, you will be a Vaisya, not a Brahmana. So I don't care for Brahminhood. Then comes the fourth. For this, Atabhyam. Atabhyam means in the forest. So you could say, okay, you don't want Mukti, you don't want Swarga, you don't want to be a Brahmin. Maybe you can be born on earth in some other barna, but in a great city,
in a palace
maybe, near Krishna, in Dwarka maybe, or in Mathura. So you say, Nehi. Atabhyam. Atabhyam is in the forest.
In Wald.
I want to be born in the forest. I don't care for the big city, cosmopolitan, aristocracy. I don't care for Dwarka and Mathura. That's the implication. I care only for this forest. He didn't know, he didn't say this forest. He said in the forest. So the last word that fully, finally qualifies which forest, of course, is Gokule.
No.
So you don't want Mukti, you don't want Swarga, you don't want to be a Brahmin, you don't want the big city. So any forest, Gokule. No. I want that particular forest. And Sanatana Goswami says something very interesting. When he says Gokule, he's pointing to one specific forest among other forests. There's one forest called Tapovan, which is generally a forest when you perform tapasya. So the implication is Brahma is rejecting going to the forest to engage in tapas. Like implying, I don't want to enter the forest for tapasya, because most people, I go to a cave to engage in austerity, like Lakshmi did. Remember the other day the story? She entered the forest for tapasya in Belvan. Ram said, I want to enter the forest, but not for tapasya. I want to enter the forest to follow the footsteps of those who enter the forest on a daily basis with Krishna and the cows. That's the ultimate implication. So this way, with these five words, Sanatana Goswami said, Brahma rejecting these five obstacles to bhakti. Desire for mukti, for swarga, for pride of high birth here, attachment to the big city. Anyhow, whatever is not passionate attachment to be in the forest of Raj. We'll switch?
Yes.
Okay. Take some water with you, just in case.
There's already one cup there.
Okay, okay.
And you have one.
And I have one more here. But this is not all, of course. No? No? This is not all. Brahma is, I say, okay, I reject all the things, and I just want a birth in the forest of Braj and of Gokul. But then he says, Kimapi, as we already mentioned, which is, I want any birth in that forest. Even a birth as an insignificant grass will fulfill my desire. So that also speaks about how much the forest of Braj fulfills all desires. In Braj it is said that the land is Chintamani, touchstone. Every tree is Kalpa Vriksha, fulfiller of all desires. All the cows are Kamadenu, can give unlimited streams of milk and so many things. My interesting thing is that, imagine if you are in a place like that, no? The soil, the trees, the cows can give whatever you want. The most interesting thing is that nobody there wants anything for themselves. Yeah, even they may think, okay, I want some flowers for Krishna, but even they don't have to ask the trees, give me some flowers for Krishna. The trees already will be bending and providing them.
They could ask for a garland, but no, they just pluck the flower and make the garland themselves.
Themselves, yes. Do not be deprived of the chance of some seva. So the idea here of Brahma is, even if I get a bird as a small grass, the nature of the place is such that whatever desire I have will be fulfilled in time. Why? Because a full abhishek of the foot dust of the Brajavasis can only happen here in Vrindavan. So Sanatana Goswami said that with the term abhishek, Brahma means to say he wants to be bathed on all the limbs. Whatever form he may take, of course. Because abhishek means like full bath. It's not just some sprinkling of water here, but
not so, shower.
He was full immersion. No? Full immersion. in the dust of Vrindavan, of the feet of the Brajavasis, from head to foot. And remember, when he's praying for the foot dust, he's praying for the grace of the Brajavasis. It's a way of saying, making that point. Sanatana Goswami says, or another option is that the word Abhishek comes out of Brahma's greed. Greed. He's greedy. And with this indicates, all my limbs should be successful. No. In other words, all my limbs have to be bathed by this foot dust. I'm greedy for that. I'm greedy to provide success to all my body, in whatever form it may be, even as a grass. Or, Sanatana Goswami says, another idea with Abhishek is an Abhishek that is performed with even one speck of dust from Braj will be sufficient. It's another way of making the same point. Even one speck of dust there, it's able to provide full Abhishek. And it's able to fulfill all my desires. So again, this is a big contrast. Here we have the greatest post on the universe, Brahma, begging and crying for one single speck of dust from Braj. And why he's making such extreme statement? Because the point is that one speck of dust in Braj contains all the holy places in it. And therefore has the power to grant any desire one may have, any position in life one may desire. Sri Braja Dham Ki.
Yes! Like Babaji, one person came to him and said, oh, I bought some little land in Vrindavan. And they said, what? Yes, I bought some land here. And Babaji Maharaj said, you know, you have no idea. In one little grain of dust, the riches of millions of Vaikuntha planet is in there. How can you buy land? It's completely impossible.
Yeah. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Vaikunthira priti vyadu sakal chinmai, which means from Vaikuntha upwards, including Vrindavan. Sometimes Vrindavan is called Vaikuntha 1, which means the forest in Vaikuntha. In the whole spiritual world, there is one little forest. And Vaikunthira priti vyadu sakal chinmai. There the land. Is totally transcendental conscious substance. So remember, when we say dust, we are not saying dust. There the dust is fully Krishna conscious. The dust in Braj is made of prem. So to be bathed of that dust means to be bathed in divine love, basically. So to further make his point, then Brahma will say, this foot dust from Krishna, again, is soaked but not attained by the Shrutis themselves. And Brahma is looking at his calendar and said, even to this day, this has not happened yet. Even till now, that you are present in this world, he's saying to Krishna. Remember, Krishna's on earth performing Prakat Lila. So even you are here, but at this precise moment, the Shrutis are trying to catch that and they're not able. So Sanatana Goswami gives some possible reasons why the Shrutis are not able for this. To this. More water?
No.
Okay. So he will say, because Brahman, why the Shrutis cannot attain this? Because in the Shrutis, Brahman is praised like if it has the position of Bhagavan, basically. Like if you go to the Upanishad, you will hear a lot about Brahman, 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 Brahman. For example, Chaitirya Upanishad say Brahma Pucham Pratishta. Like Brahman is the foundation. No? Of course, you go to the Gita, say Brahma Nohi Pratishta Aham. He say, I am the foundation of Brahma. Maybe Brahman is the foundation, but I am the foundation of Brahman. So in other words, if you read the Shrutis out of context, it seems they are praising Brahman only. Although we Gaudiyas, when we read those sections, we will think, oh, this is praising Bhagavan. Because ultimately Brahman, what's all that Brahman can be? Purna Brahman, as we said the other day, Purna Brahman Sanatanam. So ultimately all this statement from the Shrutis point to Bhagavan. But over exactly. Krishna says in the Gita 15th chapter, I am to be known through the Veda, through the Upanishads. So I am the ultimate subject of all those texts. But apparently, overtly, it seems they are speaking about Brahman. So Sanatana Goswami, they say, because they are doing that and they are not being so clear about that, they are now not able to attain that. Or another thing, he says the Shruti or the Veda is mostly promoting karma and jnana. Karma in the main three parts of the Veda and jnana in the smaller portion, the Upanishads. So we could say that if the Shrutis would have attained Krishna, actually, to attain Krishna means you have to abandon the sadhana of karma and jnana. Attaining the goal of attaining bhakti as the goal. And if you have attained that bhakti, you wouldn't be praising karma nor jnana. But the Vedas are advising in that direction, jnana, karma. So that means they have not yet attained that type of bhakti. Jnana, karma, adi, and avritam. Which is qualified by leaving those type of things. Brahma continues. Sanatana Goswami's purport, we are there. So he goes to one of the two names that are given to Krishna in this verse, Bhagavan and Mukunda. He goes to the two verses, to the two names, sorry. Mukunda, what does it mean Mukunda in a general level? He who gives mukti, Mukunda, is... That's one level of meaning. We will reach gradually to others. That's outside of Braj. Now, what Mukunda means outside of Braj. So, Brahma still is not fully entering into the Braj, so he can refer to this general meaning. You are Mukunda, the giver of liberation. But not only that, you are Bhagavan. And Bhagavan means he who possesses full Aishwarya. So you are dedicated to manifest your full Aishwarya. As Brahma saw some minutes ago when Narayans were coming from Krishna, remember, in the Brahma Vimohan Lila. Or we could say that Brahma is calling Krishna Bhagavan because you manifest full Aishwarya. But actually, it's another way of saying you are manifesting full Madhurya in Braj. And as we spoke, for in order to have Madhurya, you need to have Aishwarya. So in order to have full Madhurya, you need to have full Aishwarya, supporting that in the background. That's why we say there's more Aishwarya in Vrindavan than anywhere else. So we could say that's why Brahma is calling Krishna also Bhagavan, because he's having a glimpse of the fullness of intimacy that is of Madhurya that is there in Braj. And he knows, for that to happen, there has to be full Aishwarya in the background. So Brahma is saying, okay, so then you are Bhukunda, you are Bhagavan. And on top of that, Jajivitam to Nikilam, you are the entire life of Gokul, of the people of Gokul. And Sanatana Goswami says the implication of this, what Brahma is realizing now, when he says you are the life of Gokul, he's taking that literally. Means if you are absent for a moment, they will die. If you will be absent for a moment, they couldn't live. So we could say that's another proof that actually Krishna never lived Vrindavan. Because if he will actually live, the Vrajavasi couldn't live any longer. We see that when Krishna appears to leave Vrindavan in some form, the Vrajavasis continue living. Of course, on the bordering death in separation. But somehow they are still alive. Somehow they are feeling Krishna's presence there. If that wouldn't be there, it's over. But of course that never happens, because he cannot ever leave them. So with this, when Brahma is realizing how much they love you, they cannot survive even for a second without you. So Sanatana Goswami, with this, the topmost type of prem is being indicated. No? Brahma is pointing, these Vrajavasis love you more than anyone else. Their prem is supreme, as we said the other day. They have a very special su type of prem. Therefore, they are supreme. And therefore, you are the supreme personality of Godhead. You are the supreme personality of Godhead, Swayam Bhagavan, because of their supreme, of their special prem, makes you who you are. So at this point, Sanatana Goswami concludes saying, at this point, Krishna may reply to Brahma. You want to be born in Braj, so that you receive the food dust of some resident of Gokul. By why don't you actually ask for a birth as a cowherd? So with this, Krishna is saying, I know what you want, actually. So interestingly, Krishna is asking this other possible question, not so much, don't you want a birth in why don't you want to leave Satyalokna? In this case, he's saying, why you are not speaking plainly, directly, about what you want? You say, any birth in Braj? Why don't you tell me, give me a Gopa Sarup? So Brahma replies in this verse, saying, well, indeed, it's even actually, unsuitable for me even to pray for the dust of the Vrajavasis. And the dust of your feet who walks in Braj. For me, it's even too much for me to ask even that. Now, this is not even attained by the Shrutis, Brahma is saying. And these Shrutis are given all knowledge, they are more ancient than me, and they have not attained that. So it is too much for me to pray even for that food dust. So, considering that, how will I dare request you for a birth as one of your divine cowherds? Again, he's invaded, possessed of great humility. How can I pray you for birth as one of your divine cowherds? And he concludes saying, welcome. Who are these cowherds? He say, they made you submissive to them by the way of their love. By the way of their love. Should I repeat or you?
Yes.
So Brahma said through Sanatana Goswami, these cowherds made you submissive to them by the way of their love. No? As we the other day describe one meaning of possible meaning of the word Trivanga. No? Krishna is crooked in three because of the weighty affection of the Vrajavasis. It's so much that he cannot remain straight. He's like and he becomes submissive to them. Aham Bhakta Paradino, Bhagavan himself. Interesting, this famous verse, Aham Bhakta Paradino, Krishna is not speaking that verse. Vishnu in Vaikuntha is speaking that verse. He's saying, I'm a servant of my devotees, I don't have any independence, they fully control me. So that's said by Narayan in Vaikuntha. So you can imagine what Krishna must be saying if that's said only by Narayan. How much he is controlled in Braj. So from that side, Brahma says, That's why I'm not praying for that so directly. It's so much. Let's go to Srila Jiva Goswami's commentary. A new seatbelt, just in case required. A new plane.
Security. We should leave the seat.
I'm testing you. I'm just throwing the seat belt at it. I'm seeing what you want to do with that. You have to be put to test. So. So many of you may fail the test like Brahma did. He didn't pass the psyche test in the Brahma Mohanli. Oh, anyhow. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada ki jai. So Sri Jiva Goswami says, praising the great glory of the Brajavasis, Brahma develops extreme humility and indicates that being counted among them, he boldly desires service at Krishna's feet. Sorry. So you also say here, Brahma is boldly declaring, "I want service at your feet." Being born among the Brajavasis. So then, Jiva Goswami will mention the five things that Sanatana Goswami mentioned that one has to reject. So I won't repeat that again. But he says something interesting in relation to one of them that I will share. Connected to the word Iha. Remember what was the meaning of Iha?
Here.
Here.
Here in this form.
I mean, it can mean many things. It means only here, and depending on the context can mean other things. So now we'll see what does it mean here for Jiva Goswami. So he says by saying Iha, Brahma is rejecting the five types of liberation, since they are unfavorable for service. Salokyas, Amipyas, Sarshti, Sarupyas, and Sayujya. Even the four types of mukti in Vaikuntha. No, thank you, Brahma is saying. Not only he rejects mukti in an impersonal way, but all forms of mukti. No? And what's the mukti? If you want to call it mukti, what Brahma wants? Iha. Iha means here. And in this case, Iha means in Braj. Here in Braj. He's in Braj now. This is, my liberation is my birth in Braj. That's my mukti, Brahma says. Other people may say, my mukti is Brahman, my mukti is Vaikuntha. Brahma says, my mukti is in the forest. In Vaikuntha there is Salokya, etc. But in Mathura there are forests such as Gokul, where there is grass and dirt. And there I can be covered by the dust of the Brajavasi's feet. So, that's the mukti I want, Brahma says. Through that I will obtain my desired service to Sri Krishna. And Jiva Goswami then will say something, present a similar question than the one Sanatana Goswami presented, which is Krishna asking Brahma, why do not pray for a birth as a cowherd directly? So again, Jiva Goswami further confirms, Krishna knows what Brahma wants. I know you want to be a gopa, you want to be my friend. Why you are not speaking that out loudly? So Brahma will reply, oh Bhagavan, you are the life of the people of Gokul. And you are impossible to attain by one's own efforts. We made this point many times already. We need grace. Because you are, one name of Krishna is Paratpara. Paratpara means the highest of the highest. And sometimes you are attained as Mukunda, as the giver of liberation. So you are mostly known as Mukunda, the one who gives mukti. We are mostly known as that because most people want that. I mean, most people do not even want mukti, actually. They want art. They want not even dharma. They want artha kama. Period. No. Some will be concerned with dharma. Dharma, artha, kama, tribarga. But a few ones will be concerned with mukti. But amongst those who want mukti, few will go beyond that. Krishna says that in the Gita. Manushyanam sahasrasu kachit yadati sidaye tatam apishidanam kachimam beti tatvatam. About and similar. Muktanam apishidanam and so on. So from many people, a few ones look for transcendence. For those who look for transcendence, a few ones look for me. From those who look for me, a few ones attain me. Not to discourage anyone, but just to show how extraordinary is this concern of, I want to thank Krishna for loving him. That's like, Krishna's not accustomed having people knocking his door with that disposition. He's generally accustomed people knocking his door, give me, I need this, please, God bless me. As we spoke the other day, you are the father, provide for the child. It's like if you, I don't know, have a multi-millionaire person on earth, no, like, I don't know, one Bill Gates or someone like this. So, there are three approaches to Bill Gates, if you will. No? Karma, jnana, and bhakti. No? Try to follow the analogy. So, I don't want to compare Krishna with Bill Gates. Sorry. There's someone who has lots of power and wealth and to provide, who can provide a lot. So, the karmic karma approach will be, you knock the door on Bill Gates' house and you will ask him, can you give me some money? Huh? I know you have a lot. So to give me $1,000 for you is a joke. But for me it will be a lot, so please. Huh? So that's a karma approach. I approach you, but with an interest of you giving him something to me. So one says, I don't care for you. I care for your money. Then the gyan approach. Gyan is knowledge. So you will knock on Bill Gates' house. I mean, probably you won't be able to get to that door, but somehow you got a contact to get there. It's not what you know, but who you know. So you will knock, and you won't ask Bill Gates, give me money. You will ask, can you give me the knowledge through which you got all this money? So I can get all that money myself. So apparently you are not receiving anything, but you are receiving more than if he will give you the money. You follow? But still you are interested in something for yourself. You are not interested in Bill Gates. So the bhakti approach will be, you knock on his door and you ask, and he already tired of having so many people knocking on his door. Give me money, tell me how you did it, give me the knowledge. So he opens, waiting. Okay, another one who will ask money. He already comes with some money in his pocket. How much you want? No, I don't want money. Oh, so then you want to know how did I got all this money? No, I don't want that. So what do you want? I just came here to offer myself in your service forever. So Bill Gates is like, what? Nobody comes with that attitude. Everyone comes to me to ask things from me. And you will say, no, but I only care about you. I would like to just give myself to you selflessly, without any separate desire. So Bill Gates is like, what's going on here? So his heart will melt, and he will say, I mean, please, I need someone like you. You will give meaning to my life. I'm so tired with all these other people. So again, saving the differences between the analogy. So many people approach Krishna with, give me knowledge, give me money, give me mukti, give me. So he's generally nowhere as that. He who gives dharma, artha, kama, or moksha, mukunda. But generally he's not known as the giver of bhakti. In the sense of, generally not many people go with that. No? The Bhagavatam says, muktim dadati karhichit smana bhakti yogam. No? It says, he gives mukti easily, but he does not give bhakti that easily. Which also means there's not so many people who go for that as well. So Brahma is saying, on one side you are Mukunda, but on the other side I see that your Brajavasi devotees cannot live without you for a moment, without bhakti. So he creates this contrast between giving liberation and seeing these Brajavasis who cannot live without him for a moment. They don't care for liberation. They care for Krishna. And they care for Krishna so much that one moment without him, they are dead. I try to imagine how much you love someone, and 1 second without that person, you cannot continue living. And you have to love someone for that to happen. A lot. So with this, Brahma is pointing, the Brajavasis have the highest love. They are way beyond mukti. They are post-liberated. They are so beyond mukti that they don't care for mukti. And they care so little for mukti that they feel themselves, we are actually bhada jivas. We are conditioned souls on this world. The Brajavasis do not feel we are super extraordinary devotees of Krishna. They feel we are people here struggling in samsara with our houses and cows, and we love Krishna, yes. But actually they are beyond all muktas. So mukti is so much far from them that when we look at them it seems that it's conditioned life. Because mukti is so far from them. They are so much beyond that. So Brahma concludes according to Jiva Goswami. Brahma is telling Krishna, since you have appeared on earth, Krishna, your foot dust is directly visible to the Upanishads now. And these Upanishads wonder, what is the glory of just one speck of that foot dust? They mean that, this means, Jiva Goswami said, that the Upanishad never reached an end of that. No, the Shrutis are affirming the glory of one particle of your feet has no end. So that's another meditation. Still today, for eternity, the Upanishad keep thinking, what's the glory of one speck of the foot dust of Braj, of Krishna, of the Brajavasis? And then Jiva Swami quotes Taittiriya Upanishad, Yato Vachani Vartante, which means words cannot describe him. It's not possible to say anything. So the Upanishad will also say, oh, what can we say? We cannot say anything. Oh my God. Let's conclude, or almost conclude, with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Sarartha Darshini. It's a very interesting one. Is there one question?
She's asking. Also, then this means you worship a grain of dust. It's like you everything. But you don't know. You don't know what it actually is all in it. You have no idea what it is, but you just worship one grain of dust.
So, what's the question?
Like the Shrutis, they can never understand and
reach one.
So she's like, so this means they worship this grain of dust even without really knowing what it means?
I mean, they know what it means. That they know what it means that they know that there's never an end to the glory of that grain of dust. So in that sense, they don't know what it means. Now, if like we worship Krishna, let's say, but we don't know the extent of his glories. They're unlimited. So we worship Krishna because we know the unlimited glories of Krishna. But we will never reach the end of that. As we quoted, for Krishna himself, that's impossible task. one verse on the Bhagavatam, Krishna say that Krishna himself cannot conceive the fullest extent of his own glories. So if that happens to Krishna, what to speak to us, with us? So Bhishmaraj Chakravarti Thakur will present a very interesting commentary. There will be a lot of back and forth between Brahma and Krishna, a dialogue in between. So Brahma says, according to Bhishmaraj Chakravarti Thakur, I offered water from my devoutly cupped hands, which is in India like a gesture, like you are leaving something. So I offer water like this unto all the opulence of the world that I had achieved. Unto all the opulence yet to be achieved. And unto liberation. Like implying, I have given them up as dead, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. As if they were dead. There's something. I don't care for that. So that's how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur begins the purport. Brahma says, I don't care for any of those things. Similar to what Jiva and Sanatana say with these five words. I reject this, I don't care for liberation, I don't care for this. Emotional in this way, Brahma speaks with conviction here. So having rejected all the things, Brahma is determined, saying, therefore, I must obtain that good fortune by which I can attain the food dust of those Brajavasis. So Brahma is like determined, I must obtain that good fortune. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that regarding I must obtain that good fortune, the word bhavatu should be added. So bhavatu means like, it's like an imperative mode in Sanskrit. Like, it has to happen. There's no second option. It has to happen. And the essence of that, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, is I will obtain it. So he's so determined, I will obtain it, but also he's so humble, so he will say, I will obtain it if your divine sidelong glance falls on me. So this is a very important combination we have to have in our bhajan. To have full determination and faith, I want this, I have to obtain this, but also full humility, understanding, but it only be possible if you give me your grace. It's not that I determine I will obtain it by myself separately. It's not happening. So this is an important combination. Because externally it may sound like Brahma is being too bold. I will obtain it. I'm determined to obtain it. But that's on the basis of full humility. Only if you throw your silent glance on me. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, to this Krishna makes reply, forget about your longing for this. There is, in that particular edition, there's no commentary almost. Right? Right?
No.
There's some mistake there. Yeah. In that edition, there's just 3-4 lines.
Is it only for this? For this? Only in this verse or in all verses?
No, in that one. Maybe not.
The other verses also things missing?
I don't know. We have to go one by one. But in this one, there are things missing. So
I was just, you know, shocked.
Yeah. That's what I'm stopping and clarifying for you to survive the shock there. Aho. No, the purport is way long. That's just 3 lines. So then in other editions you will find it more in detail, yeah. So anyhow, Krishna may reply at this point to Brahma. So Brahma had just presented this determination, this longing, this humility. And Krishna may say, forget about this longing for all this. It's too hard to get. Not easy to enter Vrindavan. So ask for something else. As long as it may be fitting to you, ask for something else. So Brahma will reply to them. May I be born? Even in Gokul. So Gokul in this case will refer to the general Brajamandal area outside of Vrindavan. No? Because Vrindavan is one of the 12 forests, but Gokul can refer to the area, broader area, which does not specifically speak about Vrindavan. So that's another possibility. Here Brahma is asking, if I cannot be born in Vrindavan, may I have a birth even in Gokul? Maybe as a rock. No? Like a rock, like maybe used as a seat for some of the inhabitants there. Or maybe as a cloth. And somehow maybe worn by some of the inhabitants there. Although that's not in Vrindavan, the dust from Vrindavan will get closer to that. Because some of the wind will carry that and maybe touched by that. Because even in Mathura, somehow I will receive some abhishek of the foot dust of someone who is somehow slightly related to you. No? So, if I cannot attain you directly, I miss a connection with something which is somehow connected with someone connected with you. Even if that person is, he says, even if the person is a tailor, an artisan, or even a low-class servant. No? I don't care being born as a rock near the house of those people. So Brahma's humility is like growing exponentially. But let me at least establish the most insignificant slight connection with one speck of that food dust. But Krishna may reply at this point. But what is the reason these Brajavasis have so much glory? And you, Brahma, you are known as Parameshti, which means the one who has the highest position. Material universe, of course. So you are so much revered in the world, worshipped as the creator. So you have such a high post. Are you not embarrassed desiring the food dust of these ones who belong to a lowly caste of cowherds? So again, Krishna is testing the student. You are the highest person on the universe. Are you not ashamed to be crying for a speck of dust from this lowly, uncivilized tribe of cowherds, of which I am one of them, by the way. And Brahma's reply to this testing is Jajivitam to Nikilam Bhagavan. Bhagavan is their life. You are their life. And Bhagavan has all this Aishwarya, all these qualities. Strength, wealth, fame, knowledge, renunciation, beauty. So if they are worshipping he who has all those things, they have all those things as well. So they are not lowly people at all. Brahma said, they are way above my head. Or way above my heads, he has four. And in this connection, then he goes to the name Mukunda. Which again, what does it mean, Mukunda? Outside of Braj.
The one with liberation.
The one who gives liberation. But what does mean Mukunda inside of Vrindavan?
The one whose face, Mu, is like a Kunda flower. A very, very beautiful white flower shining.
Oh,
and we can never stop looking at your face.
Krishna Chandra Prabhu ki jai. He will always have the answer, so you can. So Brajavasi says, addresses Krishna as Mukunda. it must have another meaning, because we show they don't care for liberation. So they won't address Krishna, oh, giver of liberation. They don't care for that. So Mukunda must have another meaning. So Mo comes from Mukha, which means face, and Kunda is a flowers, like a jasmine flower. So he was like whose face is like a jasmine flower, blossoming jasmine flower, fragrant, smiling. So the idea of this meaning is, it conveys a sense of beauty, no? The beauty of Krishna, the smile of Krishna. And the Brajavasis are only living on that smile, on that beauty. And that's their jivitan to Nikilam. Nikilam means exclusive, only, entire. Jivitan means life. Their entire life is sustained on your kunda flower like face or something. And again, Bishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes the same point. Without you, they die on the spot. So you are their means of living. Their means of living is not working, earning money, eating, sleeping. All those functions do not exist for them. It is, all of them are replaced by you. Tanman manaskamat pranamadarti tyakta dahika yatyakta lokadharmascha madarti tambibarmyaham. Krishna is telling to Uddhav, for my Brajavasis, I mean, tanmanaskas, their minds, their life airs, their actions, everything is just invested in me. So they have given to me in such a way, tanmanaskas, tadalapas, tadvichestas, tadgunami bhagam. So how can I repay to them? I have to give myself completely to them. So he's saying, like he says in the Gita, yogakshemam bahamyaham. So I take full responsibility of maintaining my devotees, because they are not doing anything for maintaining themselves. They are so much drawn in self-forgetfulness, and they are so much absorbed in serving me, that I have to maintain them. Because they are not thinking about eating, sleeping, and so I have to provide to them. That's the spirit of Saranagati. Koptritvi varanam tata rakshishyati vishwa. So Krishna is maintaining me. Krishna is protecting me. There's a nice story in this connection, if you give me permission for that. Or not. Regarding this verse of the Gita, from chapter 9. So Ananya chintayantumam pradyupasate tesam nityabhiyuktanam yoga kshimam bahamyaham. The famous verse in the ninth canto chapter of the Gita, which basically Krishna say, those persons who exclusively are absorbed in me, who are worshipping me perpetually with all their hearts, in brief, I provide to them what they need and I preserve what they have. And the implication is, I take away what is extra. Jasyaham anugrihnami, and so on. That, he doesn't say that there yet, but that's the implication. So once there was a devotee whose service was, every day he would read one verse of the Gita. A Brahmin also. So he would read the verse, meditate on that, every day one verse. So that day he came up on this verse. So he was reading all this. And the last line of the verse said, yoga kshiman bahamyaham. So Krishna is saying, me, aham, to my devotee, I provide personally what they lack. So the word bahami in Sanskrit implies, Krishna is saying, me, myself, I carry that. So this devotee ready to say, no, it cannot be. Now, how Krishna himself will provide to his devotee? And he's God, he's such a great person, so busy doing so many things. He cannot have time to provide personally to each devotee. He will somehow make the arrangement so every devotee receives what they need. But it's not that he will personally go and provide. So there must be some editorial mistake here. So he scratched the word Bahami. He wrote the word Karomi. Which means somehow Krishna makes the arrangement for that to happen. But he doesn't do it personally. So he continued, he closed the Gita, and he went for his daily Madhukari, which is like the work of the V means Madhukari. V goes a little bit to one flower, to another flower. So it's a way to refer to begging. Because the standard of the Brahmins, at least those times in culture, were they will sustain themselves by begging. So whatever they will receive, they will honor that day. If they do not receive anything, they will fast that day. And if they receive extra, they will give that extra at the end of the day to others in charity. So they begin every day from scratch, in zero. The idea is fully depending on Krishna. So this Brahmin went for Madhukari. And he spent a few hours outside. No? So meanwhile, the Brahmin was out, the wife of the Brahmin was at home. So at one point, someone knocks the door. So the wife opens the door. And he is a small child with a big quantity of bhoga. Fruits, vegetables, grains, milk products, everything. And they were pretty poor Brahmins, as we mentioned. So she knew, we can never afford such a thing. But the kid, the boy say, your husband sent me here with this for you, for the house. And she say, no, how can my husband do that? We don't have never enough money to buy all the things. I said, no, your husband, his name is this and this. I said, yeah, that's my husband. So she was like, how is possible that we got all this? But then she said, okay, maybe that happened, but why he sent you such a small child with such a huge quantity of things to carry? My husband is not very nice. So he said to the child, please enter my house and take a rest. You must be tired of carrying such big baggage. So when he's entering, she noticed that the child has one scratch here. Like open wound. And she said, what happened there? And she said, your husband did that to me. So the wife said, my gosh. I mean, I thought I married a Brahmin. I realized I married a monster. So you please enter my house that I will look for something to cure you and feed you and take rest. So the boy entered and sat in the living room, if you will. So the wife goes to the kitchen to look for something to cure the boy. And at that moment comes the Brahmin. Looking for something?
No.
Okay. So at that point the Brahmin comes, the husband, returns from Madhukari. He was a little bit discouraged, he didn't receive too much that day. So he was a little bit like, So he goes to the kitchen, and his wife is looking at him, like red, fiery eyes. Like, I say, okay, now the monster of the house has come. So the Brahmin is like, what's going on? Oh, so you don't know what's going on, she says. No, I don't know what's going on. Oh, so not only you are a violent person, abuser of kids, you are a liar also, a hypocrite. So this Brahmin didn't have a clue what was going on. He said, I don't understand, what are you speaking about? No, do you understand? Have you not seen that boy in the living room with all this big with this scratching on his forehead? No, I haven't seen him. And the Brahmin said, what's all this boga in the kitchen? So the wife said, so you don't know what's that boga in the kitchen? No? You made that little boy bring such a heavy load home? No? And not only that, but you hit him? And he said, what are you talking about? Which boy? The one in the living room with the scratch here. He said, there's no boy in the living room. Say, how can it be? I closed the door of the house and I have the key. There's no way he could have escaped. Well, see it for yourself. Let's go to the living room. They go and there was no boy. So the wife becomes like vimohan, no, like bewildered, like what's happened. So the Brahmin also starts to think what happened. So he is a Brahmin, so he tries to reflect and to pray. And at one point he sees at the distance the Bhagavad Gita he read in the morning, which he left it closed. So now it's open. So he asked the wife, did you open the Bhagavad Gita? I said, no, I didn't touch it. So which was the boy? How was the boy? He was small, like dark complexion, with some yellow cloth and some other ornaments. So the Brahmin is like, so he goes to the Bhagavad Gita, and the Bhagavad Gita is right exactly open when he was reading it in the morning. So he saw that in the verse, not remember, he had scratched the word Bahami, and he wrote Karomi. And now he saw that the word Karomi was scratched. And again the word Bahami was written there. Underlined in capital letters. So at this moment the Brahmin realized Krishna himself came to confirm his own words in the Gita. I myself provide what my devotee needs. So to say that the scratch he had was the scratch the Brahmin did to the Gita, which is not different from Krishna. So at that moment the Brahmin started to cry in ecstasy, you know, realizing how Krishna is following his words, Satya Bratam.
And that his wife had Darshan.
And his wife had Darshan. She was more fortunate than him. So for different reasons the Brahmin cried. But again, anyhow, this is a story to show how Krishna is maintaining his those who forget about themselves in his service. And again, ultimately this applies to the Brajavasis. So Bishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the word Nikilam, which means their entire, related to Jivitam, their entire life, means that even a little aspect of their life, of the Brajavasis, is not for the purpose of eating, drinking, and so forth. Even if externally they seem to be doing those things, whatever they do is for the sake of Krishna. So somehow Krishna makes the arrangement for them to survive in their service. They are not thinking about that. So this is a very unique condensed psychology. So externally Braj seems ordinary, but if you pay close attention to their psychology, whatever so-called ordinary things they are doing, they have family work, they go to the bathroom, they eat as we do. But Nikila Jivitam, their whole life is just absorbing this unique converging point, Krishna. They're obsessed with Krishna. So Brahma concludes, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, to this day, I'm going to the last line. To this day, this Brajavasi's foot dust is still being soaked by the scriptures, but is not close to being obtained even. So the idea here, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, is the following. So the scriptures are looking for that, but have not obtained. So Brahma is looking to obtain that. So is Brahma portraying himself as superior to the Vedas? If that would be the case, no, praying for this might be embarrassing. So Brahma says, no, let me clarify what I'm saying. So Brahma says, when I say in verse 30, may I have great fortune to know Master. Remember, verse 30, he was praying, let me born in whatever form as your devotee. That was somehow in the mood of Vaidhi Bhakti. Oh Master, let me be your servant somehow, anywhere. But that prayer was just so that immersed me in the nectar of the ocean of Raganuga Bhakti. So that previous prayer was more like foundational sense of dasya. But now that helped me to enter into the ocean of Raga Bhakti. So now I'm praying to become one of the followers of the people of Braj. So that's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. A few words before finishing. We have some minutes yet. Okay. Eternity is still supporting the event. Baladevi Vidyabhushan. He says something very interesting. Again, going to this last line. The foot dust of the Brajavasis is soaked by the Shruti still today, but it's not obtained. So the idea is, Brahma may ask, why will desiring such a thing be embarrassing for me? One could say, well, the Shrutis are looking for that they have not obtained. So how do you dare to pray for that you, Brahma? But Brahma said, I'm famous in the world precisely because I uphold the Shruti. In other words, if the Shruti are searching for that food dust, and I'm the one who upholds the Shruti, then I must want it as well, also myself. So it's not, I'm not embarrassed, I'm looking for that. And then Srinivas Suri, another commentator, he concludes saying that Brahma is speaking this verse with the following idea in mind. Going back to this humble determination. I must obtain what I prayed for. So again, Brahma somehow prayed for Sakya. He wants that. But in order to obtain that, he needs grace. And again, a word for grace here is foot dust. That's the meaning of grace. He needs the foot dust of the Brajavasis. So as a conclusion, as we already mentioned, because of humility, Brahma is not praying here directly, I want to be a cowherd boy. But he's praying to attain the foot dust or the grace. Of the residents of Braj. Because that's the way you can become someone in Braj. Obtaining the grace of the Ragatmikas. So he knows that. Brahma is aware of this. He's showing his skill in Raganuga Sadhana. And thus he's praying for Bhuri Bhagyam, for this greatest of good fortunes. He knows, I can only attain that Bhuri Bhagyam by the grace of the Ragatmikas. So in this way Brahma expresses very exemplary humility in this verse, which again for us as sadhakas is very helpful. Humility and prem are almost synonymous. Sanatana Goswami says in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the more humility you have, the closer you get to prem, and the more prem you have, the more humble you become. And the two of them start to act as cause and effect with one another. Humility is fostering prem, prem is fostering humility, humility is fostering prem, no end. So here Brahma is showing this extreme humility. Again, praying for the foot dust means give me your grace. I will say the other day once one devotee went to Srila Siddhar Maharaj and he tried to take the dust from his feet. Srila Siddhar Maharaj was watching, looking at him. Hey, what are you doing? I'm trying to take the dust from your feet. And he said, oh, you think that was it? What it means to take the dust from the feet? No, it's not like that. It's not just a physical act, but it's obtaining the grace of that person. So this humility of Brahma is very exemplary. We shouldn't, how to say, downplay, underestimate the crucial role of humility. Krishna himself is so humble. we shouldn't forget that as well. Sometimes he acts in such a way that it seems he's not humble. But there's, he's deeply humble.
He's the humblest.
Yes. One nice one example that comes to mind, let's go to the Bhagavad Gita for a minute. No? Remember, Krishna is the chariot driver of Arjuna. As we mentioned, that's not a very high rank position in the battlefield.
Yeah, like
I'm the driver. So it is said that in Mahabharata, for example, it is said that there's one character called Karna.
Karna.
Okay, you know it. In the Kuru side. So he knew I have to fight with Arjuna. And Arjuna's chariot driver is Krishna. So Arjuna is pretty well equipped. So I will have to fight against Arjuna. So I need a good chariot driver on the same level. So he asked for Shalya. So, because again, I have to be properly equipped. In this type of competitions, every detail counts. No? Like if you are, I don't know, running on a competition on bicycle, everything will count, which is the weight of the cloth and how much it suits, how much it will make a difference of a millisecond, how faster you can go, so you can win. So every detail has to be considered. So Karna was thinking, I need a specific chariot driver. So he went to Shalya and said, can you be my chariot driver? And Shalya almost freaked out. Like he felt insulted. Did I come here to fight or to drive? No, he was a Kshatriya. So I want to fight. I'm a Kshatriya. To drive a chariot, that's lower position. But Krishna was the chariot driver. No? So that's Krishna's humility by the love of Arjuna. Now even he has a name in that connection, Partha Sarathi, no? Chariot driver of Arjuna. You follow, he's God, but he's not ashamed of being a chariot driver and being known as such for eternity, Partha Sarathi. Mm-hmm. Again, as we said the other day, if you pay attention to the cover of the Gita, you get the essence of the Gita immediately. You see Krishna's humility and Arjuna's love for Krishna that makes God becoming your Uber, your chariot driver. As we know, Arjuna will tell Krishna what point, put the chariot in between the two armies. He will be even giving orders to Krishna. And Arjuna is very humbly following, like a servant of his devotee. That's who he is. And here we are speaking about Arjuna in the Gita, not the Bhagavatam and the Brajavasi standard. So there another standard of humility will be present. So the point with this is, if you're a very great person, you won't be willing to be thrown on the street or driving someone else's car. You want to keep being a high person. But here the greatest person is doing the most ordinary thing. Krishna as a chariot driver. So similarly, inspired by Krishna's humility, Brahma, in another sense, the highest person, he's praying to apparently the lowest thing. But it's not the lowest because it's a speck of dust in Braj. As Krishna driving Arjuna's chariot, it's not the lowest because he's doing that out of love for his devotee. So a few words to reflect on this value of humility and how it plays out in Krishna himself and in Brahma's work. So, having, just to conclude here, Brahma is speaking, Bhuribhagya, my greatest good fortune. So he spoke in this verse about my greatest good fortune in connection to the Brajavasis, for whom Krishna is their everything. So in the next verse, tomorrow, our last verse here, Brahma will turn from his own good fortune and to the Brajavasi's good fortune. Brahma will turn to Krishna's own good fortune by him being connected with the Brajavasi's. No? So he will ask him, like, for the Brajavasi's, you are their very life. actually. They give themselves to you, their life, everything in such a way. So Brahma will ask Krishna, how do you plan to repay back to them? That would be a very interesting question. That will make Krishna think about deeply. And there will be a very extraordinary result as a reply to that question that will come later in the Bhagavatam. Yes. So later today we'll share some glimpse of that. So today we'll have our last class here in Ananda Dham, so we will get to that very high point of the Brahma Sutra. Well, today we will put the discussion to rest, unless there is any burning question.
Yes.
I was thinking, and it just finished now with the sentence, how will you pay back to them? And I was wondering last night, after you talked about how their friendship is like equal, what the sacrifice of Krishna he wants to reciprocate. And there was one scene that you described when they're decorating, like Krishna's friends are decorating him to get ready to go to the forest and to meet Radharani at Radhapur. And then you said some sakas also then had the same ornaments. And then I was suddenly wondering, and it's probably a silly question, but I'm quite new, so probably most people know, but I was wondering, if Krishna also feels he wants to ornament his friends, that they can also go, because I heard that some friends go with him to the Radha King, only few are allowed to go there. And if he also wants to reciprocate the love they give to him, because they want him to experience this romantic love, does Krishna also sometimes want his sakas to experience this kind of romantic love? Or if that's not possible because the gopis are only attracted to Krishna, so that's not possible at all, or if the sakas don't even think about that, or I don't know.
Yeah, I think you already know the answer. You are just wanting to confirm it.
No, I don't know.
You already tell that. We will say that the friends of Krishna who are aware of Krishna's romantic life, the Narmasakas, Kriya Narmasakas, they are not interested in having romantic relationship with the gopis. Their only focus is Krishna and to facilitate Krishna's relationship with the gopis. And all the gopis are all interested in Krishna as well in this connection. So the point is that the focus both from the gopis and from the gopas is Krishna. No, it's not so much between gopis and gopas. Everyone in Vrindavan loves Krishna the most. So in that sense we could say that difference, if you will. No, of course the interaction between Krishna and his friends is on equal terms, but that doesn't mean that in this case the friends are wanting to arrange for Krishna to meet Radha, and Krishna wants to make his friends to meet Radha or something like that. Actually, those gopis are Yukteswaris for these friends. Yukteswari means female group leaders. So Krishna's Narmasakas will have Radha, Vishakha and other gopis as their own group leaders in terms of their Madhurya side, if you will. So for them, the gopis will be more like their leaders. And so what to speak of thinking to have a romantic relationship with them. So that's their unique DNA of the Priyanarmasakas. No?
Yeah.
So that's a way.
I thought that, but then that's why I said because the gopis are only attracted.
Yeah.
But then I was wondering because, just because Bodhisattva Krishna wants so much to reciprocate that, and he can be very sneaky, as we heard.
Yeah, yeah.
He thinks as he has some tricks to maybe, yeah, has that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd like to make some arrangements for my friends and play a trick or something like that. You know, just
yeah, yeah. No, but he's so clear about what their friends want and feel, that in this case, that's likely different than how it happens with Radha and the Manjaris. Because sometimes Radha will be sneaky in the Manjaris and she will want the Manjaris to... She will tell Krishna, go and approach that Manjari. But actually she knows how the Manjari will react. And the Manjari, the psychology of the Manjaris, they don't want to have any type of direct union with Krishna. They only want to facilitate Radha's union with him. But Radha wants to play the situation, so she can see how loyal her Manjaris are to her. So it's like enjoying the whole thing. Although Krishna is addressing the Manjaris and they're like trying to escape from him. And no. It's not like this, no. Radha Rangala Sattvadushvalap, and so on. Many verses which in the Manjaris are praying to Krishna. Please, they pray to Krishna. Please allow me to serve you just by making you unite with Radha. Nothing else apart from that. No direct union like this. But sometimes those dynamics happen in the side of the Manjaris. But generally we don't hear that from the in the other direction. No? Krishna doing that with the Priyanarma Sakas. Yeah. Okay. So I think we can conclude because before the volume gets higher and higher... It will stop in any minute. There are other questions?
A little one.
Yes? All the questions are little ones. It all begins as a little one.
Remembering the Tirubhaga yesterday,
yeah.
you said, if I didn't misunderstand, that whenever you have a lot of love for Krishna, Krishna will appear in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wonder, but we have already Paramatma in our heart. So, what's the difference? I mean, who appears in our heart? Krishna?
Yeah.
This is my question.
Okay. Have you seen, I imagine, this famous picture of Hanuman? I think we spoke there. Mm-hmm. He's opening his chest.
Mm-hmm.
Who is there? Paramatma?
Paramatma?
Why not Paramatma? Sitaram is there. That's Hanuman Sistadev, worshipable deity. So Paramatma, it's a long conversation, but I will make it brief. Paramatma is an aspect of Bhagavan, let's say, which mostly presides over Maya Shakti and Tatastha Shakti. Maya Shakti means material world, let's say. And Tatastha Shakti means the souls which are in the material world.
The soul?
The souls which are in the material world.
Okay.
Not bhakti. Without bhakti. Bhakti is not in this equation. So Paramatma is in the heart of every jiva. And it's like the supervisor, inner witness, Antaryami. No? Through that presence, every jiva will receive their corresponding karmic results according to their movements under the karmic influence.
So it's the controller, basically.
Yeah.
The one who takes note.
Yeah, but it's more still related to this world.
Mm-hmm.
This world and the souls in this world.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, that's the idea that many religions have about who God is.
Mm-hmm.
When they think about God, they will think God in relation to us and to the world.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see, that's Paramatma. Which is somehow God. Krishna is something else than God. So Paramatma is mostly connected with Tatastha Shakti and Maya Shakti. But Krishna is exclusively connected with Swarup Shakti. Krishna is not connected with Maya Shakti. It's one of his Shaktis, but he's not entering in direct connection with it.
We're talking about Krishna.
Yes. Krishna. And Krishna is not connected with Tatastha Shakti if Bhakti is not there. Because Krishna is never going out outside of the circle of bhakti. Krishna doesn't know what it means to be in Maya. If God will fall under the influence of illusion, that will be compromising his position of God. That will create a theological problem. I speak in the book a little bit about that also. So the point is, in the beginning, as long as bhakti is not there, Paramatma is there. But the more we progress in bhakti, Paramatma is replaced, if you will, by Bhagavan. And the particular form of Bhagavan that we will be worshipping in our tradition.
So maybe that Krishna with the scar, I mean, that's hypothetical, can appear before us?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, indeed, in the fourth verse of Shakshastakam, Mahaprabhu is referring to Krishna with two names. He's calling him Jagadish and Pra Ishwar, Ishwar. Ishwar and Jagadish. So this verse is speaking about the stage of Ruchi. So Ruchi means you have so much taste for bhakti. Yeah, you don't have taste for anything else. No, param drishto nivartante. No, what is the verse? Yeah. You taste a higher, yeah, visaya nivartante. When you have a higher taste, all the other lower tastes are like, no, thank you. So, in that verse, Mahaprabhu is saying, I don't care even for mukti. So, I don't care for coming back to this world. So, that means he's really beyond this world. So, my Guru Maharaj has written a commentary in the Shikshastakam. And in his commentary, he points to the two names Mahaprabhu is addressing Krishna with here. Ishwar and Jagadish. So Jagadish means the Lord of the Universe, which can be a name for Paramatma. So he says, in this verse, Mahaprabhu is representing the sadhaka who is going through all different stages. So at this stage, the sadhaka is in Ruchi, called Jata Ruchi Sadhaka. Jyoti has been born. So he's saying goodbye to Jagadish. He's bidding farewell to the deity of this world, to Paramatma. And the other word there is Ishwara, which sometimes can refer to controller. But here Ishwara refers to Pranishwar, which means to the Lord of my heart. So in this verse, Mahaprabhu is saying goodbye to Paramatma and saying hello to the Lord of his heart, Krishna. No? So he, my Guru Maharaj will say, at this stage, Paramatma is kicked out from the heart. The way of saying, of course, we won't kick Paramatma, but just... No, Paramatma will retire and Krishna will manifest. Our Ishtadev will take fully the throne of our hearts.
That's why when a bhakta is looking in his heart, and his head, no, he doesn't see Paramatma at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's only his
Ishtadev. Exactly. So even before Ruchi, we are recommended to try to think in those terms. Not so much, I have Paramatma here. But Bhagavan is manifesting more and more as bhakti is present in the heart. More of that in the pages there. Okay.
So she says, oh, and what happens when, like, bhakti again moves out or, you know, fades out, as we can see in some bhaktas, then do we say, oh, Paramatma, come back?
We shouldn't even think that bhakti will have to move out from our heart. We shouldn't consider that possibility.
No.
But you see, you have to see reality. How many are like falling apart of the path of bhakti?
But that doesn't mean that bhakti is leaving. Krishna says in the Gita, Neha bikramanasu sti pratyabhayana vidyate svalpamapyasya dharmasya trayati mahato vayat. Say, even the slightest progress on this path of bhakti, there's no loss or diminution. And you will be protected from the highest danger.
In millions of lives.
You may get distracted for a minute, we may have some ups and downs, but that doesn't mean that bhakti has left you or something. So we should be accustomed to think, bhakti is not leaving me. I may get distracted for a moment and I may not be advancing so quickly, but that doesn't mean that bhakti has left and Krishna has left the heart and now there is a hole there or Paramatma is forced to return.
But here we are talking about in terms of eternity, of the eternity of our innumerable lives, you know, fragments of lives.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But we should think of the things with lots of hope and positivity. Once one disciple of Srila Prabhupada, Vishnu Yang Swami, says something interesting. My Guru Maharaj likes to quote that. He said that the trajectory that we have tread till finding shelter at the feet of the Vaishnavas from...
Just one second.
Brahmanda Ramitikona, from time without beginning we have been traveling in so many species and lifetimes, such a long journey, we can't even count how long it takes. And we have found in this lifetime, or maybe a previous one, but let's speak about this one, shelter at the feet of Krishna, Guru, Vaishnavas. But you have tread such a long path. So you say, what you have gone through to get to this point, that distance is far way longer than what you had to walk from this point till your ultimate goal. Even if what you have to walk from here to the goal seems too much, you have already traveled much more. Follow my point. If you were able to travel this distance without bhakti, how you cannot travel this distance with bhakti? So no matter how long it feels, it's not that much and it's possible. So we should be filled with this sense of hope and positivity and feeling I'm walking on my path to my goal. I'm on that way. And Krishna will help me. I mean, if there's nothing higher than that, that Krishna will be happy to facilitate. I have only to be cured, to take care of not being hypocritical. Basically that. No? And not attacking bhakti, which should be like madness, basically. to bite the hand that is feeding me. As it is saying in Spanish, at least. So if we are not engaging in that type of bad intention apparat, which I don't think that's the case here, there's no chance of falling or losing the mercy and so on. So we should feel fortunate, humble, and continue on our march to success. Mm-hmm. And the rest is a matter of some time. But again, there's no rush. Because the process is so beautiful in itself. We don't feel I need to go somewhere else as quick as possible. I hope you don't feel that now.
No,
no, such a nice place.
Here all the time.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I'm just leaving because I have to sit all the time in another place to other people. But I keep doing the same thing. That's the point. I'm not doing something different. I'm just doing the same thing in another place with another people, but the same thing is going on.
Where are you going, Maharaj?
Of course.
To give
nothing to hide. I'm traveling first to Bulgaria, but just for a few days. I already been there. I have my return flight to America from Bulgaria, so 2 days there, just then 2 days in Miami,
mm-hmm.
just again because the plane is going there. But actually, I'm going to my Guru Maharaj's ashram in Costa Rica. So I'll stay there for 1 month. We have a japa retreat there. So see you there.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to continue, we will continue there.
No, in December he's already somewhere else.
No, but he said there's a very nice program
in Costa Rica. In December, my Guru Maharaj goes there again, yeah. After being in India, yeah, I'll go there for a month again, yeah. Schedule is there open, open and willing, everyone who would like to participate. Anyhow.
I had another little question. Because sometimes cooking in other places with other devotees, you know, who are not vegan.
We'll leave that for the evening. Because that's not so related to today's verse, right?
No, it's not related.
So today in the evening we have Q&A.
Okay,
so we keep
yes.
the conversation on the topic,
right. Yes.
But in the evening we have Q&A, so
yes.
we'll start with your question
right.
today.
Yes.
If that's okay for you.
Yes.
Okay. Sadhu Sangha Ki.
No, one more thing here.
But Sadhu Sangha Ki. Jai.
Jai.
Okay. Nonetheless, we have to say Jai.
I was like, when we meditated through this beautiful, beautiful verse, I had like the feeling of Rupa Goswami's song, Krishna Deva Bhavantam Vande. It's like Rupa Goswami is then praying, Yadi Api Samadhi Shubhidi Dabhi Pashati. Like, Rupa Goswami is like praying, I just want unalloyed devotion forever. But then he said, I think, maybe when Brahma is for thousands of years in Samadhi, he gets the light that is emanating from your feet. But I still want it. So Rupa, the whole prayer is in that mood.
Mm.
So Brahma is exactly like in that mood a little. Mm. Says, actually, I want this. I want Jagya Bhav. But then I see how high it is. But still, I want it. And the Vedas cannot attain it. But still, it's little, huh? It's like a science of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'm looking, I have a longing for something, but I see that my longing goes much beyond my qualification.
Mm.
Can I say like this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, because as we say, costless mercy means I will never deserve it. No. I long something, but I don't feel I'm fit for that. So that's an important point. No? It goes beyond my qualification. Which doesn't mean I shouldn't make the best to qualify myself. But the more you qualify yourself, the more disqualified you will feel yourself. So that's a pretty paradoxical experience. And I would say, just to conclude on your point, which is an interesting connection between Rupa Goswami and Brahma. If my memory is not failing, and maybe you may correct me, or maybe we repent. Apart from the famous Gaur Ganadesh Deepika, in which Kavi Karnapur is mentioning who is who in Krishna Lila and Gaur Lila, there is another book ascribed to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur called Swarup Gan Tattva Chandrika, and I'm missing one word. But in a similar fashion, and then he said Rupa Goswami is Brahma. So the question is, in which sense? as sometimes it is said, no, like Haridas Thakur is Prahlad and Brahma at the same time. So it doesn't mean that necessarily they are literally that person, but sometimes one aspect of their life resembles an aspect of the life of the other. So as Haridas Thakur was beaten in so many markets, Prahlad had to go through so many difficulties. So in that sense, we could say Haridas is Prahlad. Actually, he's Brahma. We already mentioned that. But in some aspect of his life resembles Prahlad's life. In that sense, he's Prahlad. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Brahma is Rupa Goswami. But we say, no, Brahma is Haridas Thakur. So in which sense Rupa Goswami's life may resemble Brahma's life? Well, here we have one example. Brahma's prayers may resemble Rupa Goswami's prayer. In that sense, they are one. So we can kind of connect them as well and connect it to what you mentioned. So thank you so much for the contribution. Sadhu Sangha Ki.
Yeah.
Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Gaur Gadadhar ji ki jai, Sri Radha Govind ki jai, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Bol.